If you've missed a show, the full audio library is at radiomd.com. And now back to you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Brought to you weekly by Morning and Night Multivitamins and ubeauty.com. Thanks for listening here today. Time for What's Toxic and What's Not. Dr. Gary Ginsberg in his regular place in this hour, every week at this time at 20 minutes after the hour. Thanks for coming on. Dr. Mike, what do you like with Dr. Gary Ginsberg's topic six this week?
I love the toxicity of religion.
Well, let's start with that.
Well, we'll start. We won't talk about all the issues about what people's beliefs are and how we end up fighting wars over some of these things. We'll keep it to actual exposures that one can have when they enter a church or a synagogue. And I guess on top of the list is, unfortunately, holy water. A study was done in Vienna, Austria, where they looked at the church water, the holy water from 39 churches, and found it had high levels of mold and yeast and bacteria, high enough to present a concern for transmissible, E. coli type infections. And where does all these bacteria come from? First of all, the holy water is used to anoint oneself as you enter the place of worship. And so people are dipping their hands in it and then rubbing it on their forehead, maybe over their eyes, maybe on their lips. So places where one could then ingest some of the naughties that are in the water. And I'm not going to comment on how holy the water is or whether the bacteria makes it unholy. I'm just saying that it would be really wise for churches to replace those bowls of water with fresh holy water at the beginning of church services, so that people walking in have fresh water to deal with, because it's probably coming from people's hands. If people come into church, they're from all sorts of previous activities, and your hands are not clean, and water is a great breeding ground for bacteria if it's just sitting stagnant like that. So, look, you know, in our society, we tend to be germaphobes lately, and we need to have antibacterials and everything, and I've talked on the show, we're a little too germaphobic in my mind, and this may not be a huge risk, but to play it safe, it would be smart for churches, again, to change their bowls of water out, and you as the goer to church, the churchgoers, should probably avoid the lips and the eyes. Just to play it safe, you know, the forehead's fine, but on your skin somewhere else is fine if you want to rub some of the holy water on and feel closer to your maker in that way. And then give equal time to the Jewish religion, my faith, yarmulkes, which is a skull cap, could be a source of transmissible lice. So you'd hate to think that pool of yarmulkes that are sitting there as you go into synagogue, which is so welcoming and saying, you know, if you want to do our tradition, here is a free yarmulke to put on, could be a reservoir of something contagious like the cooties, like lice. But it is possible. I haven't seen a study yet that shows that there's lice, but, you do not want to share clothing and headgear and hats and things like that from people who do have it. And certainly children, young children is more a source, but, you know, young children are using yarmulkes in synagogues. So always a good idea to pack your own yarmulke to synagogue.
Hey, on a related matter, cruise ship problems. Gary, is it the cruise ship or is it unsanitary people?
Well, it's usually the cruise ship that's got a problem in its air handling system, such that there's condensation water that's accumulating, maybe from air conditioning, and it's not being drained properly, so it's sitting there, grows bacteria, that gets into the air handling system, and suddenly you have Legionella or some other mycoplasma that is circulating in the air, either or it gets into the water supply and gets people sick that way. So it's usually a problem with the way the cruise ship is handling things. Certainly, if you've got people who are immunocompromised, a cruise ship full of, for example, AIDS patients, that wouldn't help matters either. But most of us, our immune system is pretty resilient, and we can handle low levels of things.
So what's in the bread at Subway that should not be there, Gary?
Yeah, well, this made headlines this week. And in my mind as a toxicologist, it's a bit of much ado about not a whole lot. It's azodicarbonamide, which they talked about it being a chemical in yoga mats and a chemical in sneaker shoes, which as a toxicologist, I'm going to say, so what? You know, there's lots of chemicals and lots of different things, some of which are natural in food as well. But this rubber-related chemical is approved by the FDA, is approved by the Department of Agriculture. It's a dough conditioner that's used in the bleaching and rising of the flour. It toughens the dough. So big fast food magnates like Subway and McDonald's have been using it. Subway, interestingly enough, in Europe, has stopped using AZA because Europe says no good. It's got a carcinogen that it breaks down to. So when heated, you get some urethane formed. It's probably really trace levels. There is a limit to how much can be in bread, but Subway, trying to keep its image as a healthy alternative, decided to, mostly because of a blogger who got 67,000 signatures, and so these people weren't all doing risk assessments on it. They were saying, look, if Europe doesn't like it, and if it breaks down to a carcinogen, it just shouldn't be in my bread. And they're right. You know, you don't need this in bread to condition the dough. There are more wholesome ways to do it. So not the biggest. If you've been eating Subway or McDonald's for years, not the biggest risk. But I commend Subway for actually trying to keep themselves cleaner and freer of contaminants.
Got it. Now, pesticides. One more story. Pesticides, are they less safe than we thought, sir?
Well, the way we test, and I used to work in the pesticide industry, the way we test pesticides under CIFRA, the federal act, is one pesticide ingredient, one pesticide at a time, and by itself. But we formulate them so that they are emulsified, that they're spreadable, that they are easier to distribute in the environment, and when you put the whole formulation into cell culture and see what it does to cells, as this new study just did, they were hundreds to thousands of times more toxic to the cells than the pesticide by itself, which probably means that all these other inert ingredients, we call it, they're probably increasing the pesticide's penetration into the cells and making them more toxic. So will we change our pesticide laws to test as the whole product? Probably not tomorrow, but it's something really to be aware of, that maybe our pesticide laws need to be looked at a little bit harder because of data like this. We do test the whole product with the inert for some environmental state and transport issues, but not in toxicology, and that is a blind spot in my mind in the pesticide testing.
All right. You have a minute to talk about New York cideries clogged with what in about a minute, Gary?
Okay. Yeah, well, this is a story that really hit close to home to me because I really think of recycling when it comes to grease and fats in our kitchens, in our restaurants. That stuff shouldn't be going down the drain. There are cities in Europe that are collecting it, but New York City spends about $5 million a year and a lot of hassle and downtime cleaning out traps and cleaning up sewers because they're clogged up with what they call fog, fat, and grease. And these problems, these clogged up sewers, can back up, create odors, create backups into people's basements and kitchens. And so all we need to do, in my mind, is create ways for people to save out that chicken fat and whatever meat grease, save it out, and we could run automobiles on it. We could combust it and get energy. That's all energy right there that we're just wasting, and it's coming back at us as sewer gas.
Got it. Dr. Gary Gensberg, website's excellent. What'stoxic.com, what'stoxic.com. More of the top stories of the week coming up, and the FDA may reconsider levels of a certain acid in shellfish and fish. More on that along the way on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show on Radio MD. Stay well.